If you say shit to yourself you'd never say to others, second guess yourself, and never had a healthy romantic relationship where you feel cherished and loved, I've got just the thing for you. Hi, I'm Barb Nangle, boundaries coach and three-time guest on the pod. If that's you, you have got to apply for Your Empowered Life. This is my 8-week transformational semi-private program for women so you can learn how to show up as the woman you've always wanted to be. You'll get tools to create healthy communication and relationships, feel like a sturdier woman who can say no without a flood of guilt and shame. You'll learn how to create satisfying, healthy relationships with yourself and others, and trust yourself. If you want to be authentic with yourself and others and no longer worry about what others think of you, this program is for you. Apply by March 20th at higherpowercc.com/empoweredlife or at the link in the show notes.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have a shit show dude, Easton, Shit Show Easton. Let's just be honest, this is not your real name, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. It's my alter ego name.
Okay, so what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
Oh, when I walk into a room, good question.
No idea how you're going to ask me that.
I'm just going to go back and let's just say Rare Earth, I Want to Celebrate.
Okay. I just want to celebrate, yeah, yeah. Another day of living, yeah. I just want to celebrate. Nice. Carbohydrate.
Pasta and pizza for sure.
Okay, so we're going to have one pasta dish and one type of pizza for the rest of your life. Name them.
I would have to go with just a classic like fettuccine Alfredo, but I like to add some grilled shrimp on there. And then pizza, a classic Napolitano style. I'd say margarita for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, I like classic Napolitano as long as like the dough is still like a little bit chewy, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It has a little bit of body to it. Can't be just like super thin, fall apart.
I need chew. I like a doughy, actually. Like, I'm a doughy gal. Cheese.
Cheese. I like stinky cheese. I like to get, like, some nice kind of skunky, soft cheese to have with some a nice bread and some fruits, fresh fruits to go with it.
Yeah, I'm all about, I like a nice preserve. I like some honeycomb.
Honeycomb's good. I just picked up some fig jam, actually, and nice. Some stinky cheese, so I'm on it already.
Condiment.
Condiment is Hatch New Mexican green chili.
Okay, do tell more. Where do you get it from? What does it look like? What are you using it on?
All right, so New Mexicans, which I am, would argue that just like in Champagne, France, there's a region in the south of New Mexico where this very specific heritage green chili comes from. Anyway, so they grow it, they harvest it, and then they roast it under fire. And then after they're done roasting under fire, they peel off the skin and then flash freeze it. And I usually re-up like once a year. And my dealer sends me like a whole batch, which I'll store some for myself and then like sell it in an upcharge to try and pay for my stash throughout the year.
So good. Is this illegal?
It's legaler than any other dealing I've done before, that's for sure.
Are you the Walter White of Hatch Chili's?
I could be. I mean, it's a definitely, I'm in a sister state. So right next to New Mexico and Arizona, there's still a little bit of influence and not everyone has like a reliable source. So I make it happen for sure.
How do you feel about Breaking Bad's influence on New Mexico?
Well, I think that it brought to light, I mean, to be honest, the whole like epidemic of like meth still even kind of to this day now it's fentanyl, but I thought it made New Mexico look pretty badass, much more badass than it actually is, to be honest. But it was a great show. A lot of films are filmed in New Mexico.
Yeah, good old Rust, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So based off the Hatch chili. Where are you in the attachment condiment? Other than Hatch chili, like, what is your condiment life like?
I love spice. I mean, like, I put the Hatch on everything, but, you know, I like a good, like, hot sauce to add to different things. I vary from, like, the old school good sriracha that they produce in California, the OG stuff, to, like, some, like, ghost pepper stuff, you know? Like, I like to mix it up.
Okay, but so what are you, anxious? Are you avoidant? Are you disorganized?
Oh, okay. Okay, there we go. All right, so I think I'm secure. But
okay, but what were you before?
Anxious, for sure. I was anxious. And this was like, I was actually secure, but then I became really anxious when I got deep into my codependency relationships. And they were avoidant. And it just was like a whole fuckery of weirdness.
Okay. How long have you been sober? A couple years?
So I started my recovery journey 4 years ago, and I've had, you know, quite a few different speed bumps along the way.
Speed bumps, I like.
But I'm like, I've managed to maintain sobriety about 80% of the time, you know? So for me, that's doing a lot of deep work during that time. So it wasn't just passive. It was like fucking digging into the, jumping in the rabbit hole and like figuring it out. And so like, although I've had some really gnarly relapses, like, and relapses last like 7 days, max. And as little as like a day or two.
Let me make this clear. But... I'm not some sort of hooligan, only 7 days, peeps.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's been a good journey, to be honest.
So a speed bump can either be like a relapse on cocaine or on speed. I've decided that that's the new terminology that we're going to use. It's a speed bump. It's not a slip. It's not a relapse. It's just a speed bump.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of different types of bumps for sure. You know?
Yes, that's true. Okay. So then how did you find out that you were an adult child?
So funny enough, so I was like, what the fuck is going on with me? Like, I really had a gnarly relapse, and I was like, I was still trying to make it work with my son's mother and just going through like all this chaos and still being sober as fuck, working my program, like doing my deal, like meetings every fucking day beyond just AA, but also like some holistic groups that I'm a part of that are also 12-step based and recovery, like you name it, like still full throttle. And I couldn't fucking realize like what was going on with me. And then I had a hard crash, really, like, not from necessarily booze, but just a really life-changing experience that I came out of it, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Finally, like, they say you have this spiritual awakening. I don't even know if it was a spiritual awakening per se, but it was definitely like a moment of clarity where I'm just like, okay, something's not working. I need to dig deeper into this, and I need to fucking figure out what's going on. And so at that point, I realized like it wasn't the alcohol, you know. I finally realized like that's just a symptom of all the deeper shit that was below me. And at that moment, I started digging into codependency, and then I got someone introduced your podcast, and I was like, all right, I'll check it out. First, like, I looked up a shit show, and it was too like,
oh, you just muted yourself.
Wow. This is like, I didn't know what was going on with this shit show. So anyways, I found yours, and then I started hearing you actually through the podcast talk about adult child, about dysfunctional families, about narcissism, about like all this stuff. And I was like, wow. And I was really able to kind of dig into it. And that was actually the beginning of my journey, really doing a lot of self-discovery and self-study. And it wasn't from my therapist. It was literally hearing, you know, you talk about your experience in the podcast. And then I was like, all right, well,
let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's do it, folks.
Yeah.
Let the show begin.
Indeed.
Okay. So what was that experience like for you? Talk more about you saying you realizing like it's not the substances are just a symptom. What was coming together for you that was like realizing it was much deeper? What was actually going on?
It was a fact that like I'm pretty determined and devoted to trying to be like a healthy
human
person that, human that's filled with all the good stuff. And I was going on these extreme emotional, like, fucking roller coaster of doing really well. And then all of a sudden, the next thing I know, I'm having suicidal ideations, you know, like real dark shit. And I'm sober, you know, and I'm like, there's something going on. This can't be, you know, and this is, again, going to therapy, all the groups, doing all the work. And then I was just like, this has to go deeper. And I always had this innate theory that, you know, this has been going on a long time. But once I started digging into codependency and I realized, like, okay, I have an attachment deal. And then I realized I'm an adult child and I have CPTSD, and just digging deeper, 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 all the way down to childhood fucking abuse and shame and neglect. And I'm like, that's the fucking meat and potatoes of all of this. You know, this is where the root of all of this other stuff is coming from.
What was your experience in realizing that you had complex PTSD? Like, was that surprising to you? How was that showing up for you?
It was showing up because I was still participating in really unhealthy relationships that mirrored the dysfunctional relationship that I had with my mother. And it really didn't show up until like 5 years ago, or even 4 years ago, when my binge drinking really started to escalate. My son's mother got pregnant. We were casually dating in New York. To be honest, I never believed in having children, and I still think that my personal philosophy is not to add any more humans into this world. You know, and that's for two reasons. One, because of my experience growing up with my parents, and two, there's enough humans on this planet, like, and enough suffering that, like, come on. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to have my, you know, amazing son. And so at that point, some fucking Pandora's box opened up inside of me.
Shocking.
Of like all this inner, all this inner child stuff that I never had to deal with came out, and I didn't know what the fuck was going on. And until fast forward today, I really realized that his mother is very much a mirror of my mom, which is, and then I'm not trying to diagnose, but definitely a lot of narcissistic tendencies and the shame-based kind of relationship, communication and rage and just fucking, like, I didn't even know still, again, I still had this stuff inside of me. And it just rocked me. And that's when my booze picked up. And again, I'm not blaming anyone else. This is all on me at the end of the day. But fast forward now, I can see clearly that participating in any sort of unhealthy relationships, especially ones that mirror my childhood trauma, are only positioning me to relive that trauma. And fucking, that's only going to keep me going out, or worse, the usual fucking shit. Prison, jail, killing myself, or hurting somebody else. That's literally my reality if I didn't change up my environment.
Prior to your, you know, your drinking and drug use escalating, like, had you been in therapy before?
No. So I knew something was definitely off. My drinking during the pandemic started to go up because I was furloughed from my job. I think I put a lot of my values, my value on success in life was my work. I was relatively successful, didn't really graduate any sort of school, but managed to learn along the way and climb to some senior executive positions. And once that all toppled down, so did everything else. Plus having a son, drinking escalated. I was not normal. Like, and so I was like, I need to fucking get help. And so, like, I did. Entered the rooms AAA, and then like a year later, I was like, I need to get more help. Got into therapy, started really seeking everything, all the knowledge, all the support groups, all, aligning myself with fucking solid people. And so, yeah, it was just all new.
No exposure to 12-step prior to that. Like, what was it like coming into that and not, you know, kind of being blind to the process?
I think I had the typical, like, so I grew up as a I was raised in Catholic school. My mom was hardcore Catholic, plus her family. And I grew up with a punishing God. Like, it wasn't a compassionate, loving, empathetic, caring God. It was a fucking, like, pretty aggressive, mean, you're going to burn in hell, you're a piece of shit. That's how I received God in my life as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so God was not even anything all my life that would exist. I didn't believe God existed. And so going into the program, knowing it was from the outside and the general like perception is it's a God-based program. Yeah. It's a religious program. So I'm like, yeah, I work in the hospitality sector. So it's like sex, drugs, and rock and roll are like all I ever known. And like, it's uncommon to find people in recovery there. It's more common just to find all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I was always really hesitant, but then I was living in Maui. I met this guy in the gym and was just like listening to him talk about sobriety. And, you know, I was just like, wow, this guy's a really good guy. He has good values. He's really grounded. He's pretty badass, like in general. And I found myself at a point, you know, to that point of desperation where I was like, I'm ready. And got into the rooms. I actually asked him to sponsor me on the first night. Right. And it was really good, man. Like, he was really cool. He got sober at 25 after getting like beat the shit out of some cops. And this guy's like 6'5", you know, like, so he had a lot of sobriety underneath his belt already for his 40s, you know. And I was at a point where I was just ready to do whatever it took to figure out what the fuck was going on with me. And that was kind of my initiation. However, in hindsight, the biggest mistake I kind of had is, and it, I didn't know this again, is like, I was in a relationship that was toxic, that again was kind of the same trauma living that I was in with my mom. And you can't get sober. There's no fucking way you can get sober if you're living in with a toxic, you know, you're in an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
At least I couldn't.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while to like get out of that and then like start really cracking on with sobriety and healing.
Okay. So let's get to the nitty gritty. Let's talk about your childhood. Paint the picture.
Yeah. My mom. So my parents were the youngest of their siblings and they were both 18 when my mom got pregnant. So my dad was the youngest of four. My mom was the youngest of, it was the ninth of 10 children.
Wow.
And you can imagine like, you know, they didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have any real structure growing up being the youngest. They had their own generational trauma passed on to them and whatever sibling chaos added to that. And my mom, you know, what I found out years later, she had postpartum depression. So there was no real early connection with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
My dad again was kind of out of the picture working. And there's just a lot of neglect, a lot of verbal and physical abuse. Any objects, belts, bars of soap would be used. And it was really like aggressive and also neglectful, like all of it. And from an early age, I can remember just looking for any sort of recognition, love, compassion, empathy. And it just literally never existing. And I was lucky to have my grandparents, my grandmother specifically on both sides, who are actually really good souls. And yet they may or may not, they definitely played a part in my parents, but nonetheless, they were pretty like, pretty great. And so, yeah, that was like, I got in a shitload of trouble, you know, all along the way, school.
Starting at what age?
Since as far as I can remember, like forever.
Are you an only child?
No, I have two younger siblings. I have my next brother is 18 months younger. My other one is 32. Yeah.
32 months younger or 32 years old?
He's 32 years old. Yeah, he's 32 years old.
And so what was the dynamic like between your parents and did they stay together?
No. So my parents separated, I guess when I was maybe like 11, 12 or 13, I don't remember, maybe like 11, 12. My dad actually came out of the closet. So
at that age,
when I was 13, I found out. And at the time I was like a little disturbed by it, but honestly, like he's such a good guy and he has such a great soul.
Do you remember how found out?
Yeah, my mom told me.
Do you remember how she said it?
She's like, well, your dad's gay. So Yeah. Because like I was visiting him and like I was like, wow, my dad's really good friends with this guy who's like pretty flamboyant. So I was kind of putting things together at 13 anyway.
And like, was their dynamic, was it pretty tumultuous while they were together?
Oh yeah. No, it was pretty bad. Like my mom was just fucking so filled with anger and rage, and my dad's definitely an empath. I'm an empath. Like looking at my mom, she just had so many narcissistic tendencies, you know, like I'm not, again, like not trying to diagnose her, but I can probably pin her as like a covert narcissist. And it was just so unhealthy.
And so, did you split time between the two of them, or were you mostly with your mom?
I was with my mom initially, and I knew I had to get the fuck out of there. And so I had gotten in trouble with the law for stealing something out of a grocery store just for the thrill of it, to be honest. Like, it wasn't even like I had money. And anyway, so I got arrested. She's like, send him to juvie. So I went to juvie.
For how long?
I was only in there for like a week, and then my grandparents bailed me out. I went to like this ad hoc treatment center that they had. Did that, came out, and then like I knew after that I had to get out of the situation with my mom. So pleaded to the courts. I was like, look, if you don't let me go, I'm literally gonna just be emancipated in a year and I'm gonna go anyway. So either you can let me leave now and start building up a healthier community, or risk another year of me being surrounded by this same like hoodlums, you know, like legit
Like, let me go
hoodlums.
on my own, or let me go live with my dad.
No, look, go live with my dad. That was like my tactic though. I mean, at that time I was already trying to like get out of it.
What was your dad? Like, was he present?
My dad moved to Phoenix at the time. My mom stayed in Santa Fe. And so yeah, no, he was a part of that, but just the courts are really, really hard. So she also worked in the courts
Okay.
in the justice system in New Mexico. She had a lot of back end pull that she was leveraging. So it was really difficult to make that happen, but I managed to do it.
And what was the experience of your brother or your siblings?
Once I was, it was like pretty clear cut, the precedent that I set with kind of the abuse that I was experiencing with her and all that stuff. So when my next brother was like, yeah, I'm ready to get the fuck out of here too, it was much easier for him to transition over to moving in with my father too. And then my younger brother just got the brunt of all the neglect and abuse left over from my mom, and really ended up probably the worst out of all of us. But man, also he's undiagnosed schizophrenic most likely, and so that's another thing to top it off. But yeah, so yeah, we all got out of it, not unscathed, but we did.
What was your experience like in juvie? Do you remember much of it?
Well, I do. I was locked up with this guy. I forget his name. He had track marks all the way up his arm. Definitely like a seasoned dude.
Even dude, a seasoned little
Yeah.
bro.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely like very deep into gang life. So he ended up getting mad at me one night, and he like beat the fuck out of me and broke my nose, but I couldn't say anything. Otherwise, things would have gone
Yeah,
escalated. So
snitches
we
get
like
stitches.
I patched it up, the bleeding stopped. He managed to know that you can flush the towel down the toilet, so that's how he got rid of the evidence. And then I just had to deal with it till I got out of there. But it was a shitty experience, and that initial experience scared me
I
from
bet.
not wanting to go back to jail and do stupid shit like I did.
And so when you get with your dad, when you move in with him, like, was there any sort of processing of what you had gone through, like with your mom? Like, was it all just kind of brushed over?
No, my dad's very passive. It was brushed over, and I really didn't seek therapy again until my late 30s. And that's when I really started working on all that stuff and all those experiences. And in between, made a lot of like shitty decisions, put myself at risk, other people at risk. But at the same time, I always had this innate ability to surround myself with like better people, like good people. And so most of it, and most of my relationships were actually really healthy relationships. Not the best that they could have been, but definitely not as turbulent as my early late teens, and then again, kind of my mid to late 30s.
And so did you maintain a relationship with your mom when you left? Like, would you still see her?
No, I didn't look back at all. Literally, my entire life, I saw her a handful of times from a distance. I would go there. I was living abroad in the Middle East at the time, and I would fly back, spend a little bit of time with my family in Santa Fe, but I would stay elsewhere. I would never stay with her. And I made the mistake of actually staying with her last year for the first time since I was 15, thinking that she had done all this like healing and work and stuff, and I just had so much forgiveness and compassion for her to only realize that she hadn't. And I fucking put myself in the line of fire, and it brought back what I soon realized later on, like emotional flashbacks that just drove me fucking like back into my trauma.
So have you been able to talk to either of your brothers about any of this stuff?
So my middle brother, yes, hasn't done any sort of like CBT therapy or any of that stuff. He hasn't done any of it, but he's logical and he's pretty understanding. So he's also looked at or studied psychology a little bit. So yeah, I've been able to have good conversations with him, but my youngest brother, no, because he's really highly delusional and paranoid and just isn't there to have those types of conversations.
And what about with your dad? Do you have much of a relationship with him?
Yeah, like I've been like sharing all of this growth journey with him. I got him into therapy. Like he's so receptive into kind of understanding and learning. And he's grown tremendously through my growth over the last like year and a half.
That's so cool. That's really beautiful. It's interesting you talking about just how everything came up through having a son. And it's like, would you have had this opportunity to really do this deep healing had you not become a father, you know?
I mean, it may or may not have came up, you know, like who knows? The pot might have boiled over at some point for some other reason. But going to your point is like, I'm definitely grateful. And I'm definitely grateful to be on this journey of like growth and healing, because I'll be able to show up for myself and be the best version of myself. But more importantly, I'll be able to be the best version of a father for my son.
So talk about what your experience is like being a dad.
Beautiful. I mean, as far as just being a father and the pure rawness of raising a, you know, another human being has been really nice. And humans are the most like vulnerable of all mammals. You know, they literally are the only ones that require their parents to literally nurture them from the start. Otherwise, there's just likelihood is that we're not going to survive. So just being able to kind of be a part of his life as much as I've been able to has been really nice as far as just his and I's relationship.
So throughout the work that you've done over the past year or so, and like really diving into codependency, what have you learned about yourself as far as like what have been the sort of like limiting beliefs that have really been a driving force in your life?
I think my biggest limiting belief is self-worth and just having literally no self-worth, and being able to work through that both with my cognitive therapy, with my own self-work, and now EMDR therapy is helping me kind of transcend past that feeling of worthlessness and that lack of self-love and compassion. And it's grown tremendously over the last year, but I'm certainly not having fully overcome it. And it definitely shows up. And my core beliefs now are, I have a really good idea of what those are. And now I align all my relationships around those core beliefs, because otherwise, if I don't, I'm just going to be continuing that path of putting myself in that trauma again, and that misery and the dismay and the pain. And I'm willing to work through the pain and feel the pain, but I don't want to subject myself to unnecessary pain anymore.
So you said that you just started EMDR, right?
I just started. I've had two sessions so far.
And were they like actual sessions of you doing the like actual work, or is this like pre-steps, like getting grounded and stuff like that?
No, we did all the precepts in the previous few weeks, and we just started 2 weeks ago. I had my second one last week, and it's
pretty
good.
Feel free to like not share about it, but if you are comfortable sharing with it, what did you start with? Did you start with a memory? Did you start with a limiting belief or what?
Yeah, so she identified first in limiting beliefs, which was low self-worth, and basically I'm not worthy. And we came up with a saying that we would focus on helping transcend that. And that was, I am worthy and deserve eternal love. And so that was kind of like the mantra or whatever you want to call it that we would focus on to be able to work through all of it. And then she had me starting to focus on memories, and we are not doing the eye movement flashing. We're doing tapping. So I'm tapping my other side of my shoulders, which helps me get into different brain cortexes. And so I was able to open up into some memories and feelings, and we would like rate how intense that was and how much I believed it. And then she would kind of navigate on which direction to go from there.
And how did you felt after each session?
Good. I was able to get deep and pretty like, I wouldn't say 100% feel all the feelings, but probably like in the 80% range, to where I'm like not as, it didn't fully overcome me, but definitely like pretty close to where I was able to touch that depth of like sadness and pain and helplessness and vulnerability. And then she was able to help me kind of navigate out of those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Are you still pretty active in AA?
Yeah, so I still go to AA on the regular, at least like 4 or 5 times a week, and because I like to do in-person meetings too.
Yep.
So those are my in-person meetings. Mm-hmm. And then I do a shitload of virtual meetings, including yours. And then there's this other one called Recovery 2.0, which is much more of like a holistic, philosophical, spiritual-based 12-step program. And the community's fucking rad. I'm a yogi, so I'm able to really kind of connect with that world of Eastern philosophy and kind of approach to healing as well.
Have you felt like you've been able to share about this kind of stuff in AA meetings? Like the deeper stuff?
I don't give a fuck, to be honest, because at the end of the day, that is the root of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I already know I had a problem with alcohol. I already know it took me to the depths of hell. I already know it took me to jail, and it took me to like literally wanting to kill myself. Like I already know that was a problem. I already know that stopping it was part of the solution, but it's not the entire solution. That's just a piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And so I go in there and I talk about, yeah, I'm working on my childhood trauma shit, my adult child stuff. I'm working on my codependency, because that's what I know. If I don't get to the root of that and heal from it, it doesn't matter how much AA I get, I'm going to go back out. That's me, at least.
Yeah, you're gonna,
it's
have
not going to be enough.
Bump. You're going to have another speed bump.
Or just fucking like
die.
Catastrophic crash, you know?
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm. Straight into a tree.
Yep. I mean,
accident into a tree. Sonny Bono style. So talk about like on a daily basis, because it seems like you are really, you're really in it. Like you're really, it seems like you've really dedicated your life to doing whatever you can to like really heal. So like on a daily basis, like what does your life look like? What does your day look like? Because it seems like you're just doing the deal 24/7.
Yeah. Well, for me, that's what it takes right now, because if I don't, I don't want to anymore hold back, because I feel like I've already held myself back all my life enough, and I'm just looking to live. And so I wake up, I do my morning sadhana, which consists of like a quick prayer, a check-in with my mind, body, see how I'm feeling, just get my head around what the day is going to look like. I'll make sure I'll make it to, not every day, but as close as possible to like the gym, a yoga session, definitely an in-person group with AA, like the local chapter, and then whatever virtual groups I'm able to make work, whatever. And make sure that I get in all those components to tap into the fundamental things for my mind, body, soul. Yeah, so that's like my typical day. And I just listen to myself. Maybe I don't want to go to a group. Maybe I don't want to listen to a podcast or an audio book or read about stuff. I just want to listen to music or watch a show or, you know, do whatever. So I really kind of just listen to my flow and then just go with it.
Okay. Three things that you like about yourself.
I love that I'm driven enough, not give up. And I like that I've learned how to live in my own self-love, compassion, empathy, care, forgiveness, patience. And I love that I still am extremely optimistic about the greatness of a life that I can live and that I will live and that I'll find a partner to live that with. Mm. Rock on, baby.
Yes. Okay. Hope or dream for the future? We kind of just said it, but.
Yeah. I don't know. My open dream is I'd love to live on some like cool farm with lots of livestock, with lots of mountains in the water close to the ocean somewhere, and be able to live a regenerative lifestyle and happily ever after.
Mm, beautiful. Well, thank you so much. So glad to have you. So glad you wandered onto this weird ass ship.
Yeah, it's a great, great shift. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Let it all go.